Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dan Darling to the podcast. Dan is an author, pastor, and thought leader. Currently serves as the director of the Land Center for Cultural Engagement at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary and assistant professor of faith and culture at Texas Baptist College. Dan, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Well, it's an honor to be on here with you and so thankful for your leadership and for what you're doing here, even with this podcast.
Yeah, for sure. It's good to have you on the podcast. Of course, we've been friends over the years, kind of, I guess, distant friends. We never worked together in close contact, but have been able to keep up. And so it's good to have you on here. Hey, before we get into the topic today, and the topic for our listeners is Christian patriotism and building the conversation around your new book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism, out with Broadside Books. And looking forward to that conversation with you. Give us an update on the Darling family and any other broad ministry updates as it relates to your work.
Yeah, well, appreciate you asking. Yeah, been married to my wife, Angela, for 23 years. We just celebrated our anniversary and got four kids. My oldest is in college here at Texas Baptist College. And then I have a senior in high school. I have a 10th grade daughter and an eighth grade daughter. So three girls and a boy. The son is a senior. So it's a really busy, full house. Love this time of life. And, you know, things are well here at Southwestern. We're sort of the end of the semester and excited about what the Lord is doing here in Fort Worth.
And you're a Cubs fan. Is that right?
Yes, I'm a big Cubs fan. We just had a pretty good year. We made the second round of the playoffs. I feel like we got a team that's on the rise and hopefully we make some good moves in the offseason here, but it was a fun season.
On the offseason front, any particular free agent signings right now or anything transpired?
I'm hoping they sign a starting pitcher. That'd be nice to supplement their starting rotation, but we'll see what happens. I'm also a Chicago Bears fan.
So. I was about to go there, Dan. Yeah. Say a word about your Bears.
Well, they're having a good year. You know, Ben Johnson's our new coach, and we're kind of ahead of schedule. Figured it would take a couple of years, but he's doing well. The team's doing well. I like the young quarterback, Caleb Williams. So we almost beat the Packers the last game in Lambeau Field, but feeling pretty good about the season. And, you know, for a Bears fan, you know, this is a really good season. And just to have a young up and coming team, not like you Chiefs fans that have been spoiled for all these years. You just every year you're in the thick of it. So
no, this year it's a little disorienting. The fact that they're playing 500 football and I think we're kind of doing a retooling anyway. And so we'll see. But, and again, as you know, and not to drone on about this for our listeners, but as you know, I mean, just these deep postseason runs every year, it's like we've played, you know, an extra season and a half the past 7 years. And so that, and the league is just, it really is built for parity. And so when you're winning as much as we're winning every year, you're drafting at, you know, the end of the draft and just the compounding negative effect on the talent you have over years. I mean, it is something to overcome.
Yeah, Chiefs will be fine. You know, if you think about the Patriots dynasty, they had a couple years in there where they didn't make the playoffs, so they got knocked out in the first round. They retooled. I think as long as you have Mahomes and Andy Reid, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I think the former is more certain, having Mahomes. I do think it'll probably be kind of the second era or the next era of Mahomes' career. Who knows how long Andy Reid will coach given his age. But anyway, no, I'm not down. I mean, I'm a little disappointed this year hasn't went as hoped, but I think the future's still so bright in Kansas City, Dan. The future's so bright in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium and at 5001 North Oak Traffic Way.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Got a lot of cool stuff going on there in Kansas City, including Midwestern Seminary.
So. That's right. We're very thankful. Very thankful what God's doing here. Hey, let's talk about your book. Tell me, I guess, first of all, what prompted you to write it?
You know, I've been thinking about this stuff for a while. And, you know, I've always been very patriotic. I've always loved the country. When I was a kid, like I think like 11 or 12, our parents kind of packed up our station wagon there in the Chicago area. And we took a trip to Washington, D.C. This is before the internet. So I don't know how you planned a trip before the internet, but somehow people did it. And we, you know, we toured the city. We saw the monuments, the Lincoln Memorial, which I think is just, you know, really spectacular. And I just was birthed in this sort of deep patriotism. My grandfather served in World War II, was a hero. And I think, you know, the last few years, you've probably noticed this, that Christians are feeling increasingly conflicted about patriotism. I think some of it is there's a very necessary fear that they're going to make their country more important than the kingdom of God or get their priorities out of place. But a lot of it, I think, is a lot of pushback and criticism from the left, from the media, even from some evangelical leaders that you have to choose between loving God and loving your country. And, you know, it's almost cringe or even idolatrous to say that I'm grateful for the place where God has put me. And sometimes you have to choose between God and country, right? You think of Peter in the book of Acts had to say, we're going to obey God rather than man. But most of the time it's about ordering our loves and our priorities. And I come to the conclusion that to not love our country is really to be ungrateful and is not to, as the prophet Jeremiah told the exiles, not to seek the welfare, the flourishing of the city, the country where God has put us.
Yeah. And no, look, that's very well stated. I, like you, came of age, you know, as a boy in the 80s, and my early childhood was framed by Cold War realities. I mean, just it felt like good guys, bad guys, you know, Rocky Balboa versus Ivan Drago, Red Dawn. I mean, this all felt very real and very pressing and, you know, at times ominous before us, you know, that stage of the Cold War. And I think a part of that era made perhaps patriotism more natural for us, more ingrained. And from early childhood, just bought into the notion of American exceptionalism. And as I came of age as a student, as an adult, believe that's actually a very defensible position to have and still hold that. But it's been interesting the past, say, 10, 20 years in evangelicalism to see this uneasiness with overt acts of patriotism within the church and by God's people. And so I appreciate you speaking to this. More immediate backdrop, of course, is the movement, you know, often labeled Christian nationalism. And you're trying to cut up kind of a different lane here, but interacting with that some. Perhaps help us understand our categories a little bit, Dan, as far as how you think of your book and what you're arguing for and seeking to teach the church to pursue and permit as distinct from kind of the Christian nationalist movement, and if it is distinct.
Yeah, I think it is distinct. I mean, I think I first want to say, you know, the term Christian nationalism has been often used pejoratively against anybody like you or I who are patriotic, who love our country, who are conservative and want to bring our values to the public square and shape those things. You know, it's been this sort of elastic definition that, you know, anybody in our space is considered a nationalist. And I think that's unfortunate. But there are self-described Christian nationalists. I think it's a small number of people. It's a small cohort. They're loud, and they've kind of, you know, provoked a conversation here. And I think for those people, you know, they're a little dissatisfied with the constitutional order. They look longingly on the sort of magisterial Protestantism or a state church. And, you know, as Baptists, I think we would reject that. I think sometimes we feel like there's a false choice between either the state church or what the genuine Christian nationalists want, or this kind of strict secularism. And I think we don't have to choose either. There is you know, some kind of values are going to shape public policy. I don't think there's anything, there's such thing as a naked or empty public square, as Richard John Neuhaus said 40 years ago. Someone's values are going to shape it. And so I think as Christians, even as Baptists, we can say this country was profoundly shaped by Christian ideas, not Christian ideas exclusively. I think there's some Enlightenment things in there. But and this experiment in human government really only works well if there's a thick layer of Christianity and virtue and religion underneath it, not government force, but among the people in order for liberty to work. So we can say all that while also saying it's not really the government's job to tell people how to believe or how to worship. We believe that, as Jesus said, we render to Caesar what Caesar, to God's what is God's, that Paul told Timothy to pray for, you know, that the government would let us worship freely, that live a quiet and peaceable life. And at the same time, Christians should be engaged in shaping our laws. We should bring our Christianity to the public square. We should not shrink back from the important issues of the day. I think if we shrink back, something else will fill that vacuum. And I look at our citizenship as a stewardship that God has allowed us to have a voice and a vote that we should steward to the glory of God, because we love our neighbor, because we want to, you know, create a society that is, you know, good and flourishing for ourselves, for our neighbors, and for the future generations.
Yeah. And I would say for, you know, evangelicals, Southern Baptists, conservative evangelicals, especially, that balance has really been pretty intuitive over the decades, you know, meaning believing the Bible. And then as these cultural flashpoints popped up, marriage, sanctity of life, more recently, the full, you know, the full menu of sexuality and sexuality related issues and all of that, a pretty intuitive sense of, okay, the Bible teaches this, I believe this, therefore I should vote accordingly. And thus should strive for and pray for, desire to see through our statutes, a biblical Christian ethic, frame our society, longing for that, wanting for that. And I think that's what you're, what you are suggesting in your book, right?
Yeah, that is. I mean, I think Christians should be deeply involved. And really in my book, I do a pushback against the sort of self-described Christian nationalism. I don't think that's a good model, but mostly I'm pushing back really against the secular left that has tried to push Christians out of the public square, shame us for, you know, getting involved in those kinds of ways, and then really give Christians a biblical way of thinking, what does it look like to love my country? What does it look like to be engaged, given my opportunities and my calling? What are the kinds of issues that we should care about? How do we renew this country for the next, you know, 250 years? We're approaching our 250th birthday. What does it look like to renew it for the next 250 years?
Yeah. And of course, the great lie is that if we push Christianity out of the public square, say, hey, Christians should not be advocating their beliefs, that takes us to a place of neutrality. And of course, it doesn't. Secularism is anything but neutral.
Right. That's exactly right. And yeah, Richard John Neuhaus was saying this 40 years ago in his book, The Naked Public Square, but there's no such thing. Everyone brings their gods to the public square. And it's interesting. Christians are the only ones asked to disarm. We're the only ones asked to say, you know, keep your worship private. Everyone else can bring their values. And we've seen things fill it, right? I think the LGBT movement filled the public square with their own sort of sacred rites and rituals and high holy days and language. And that sort of informed what people were thinking. So someone's values will shape what is going on. And so Christians, as much as we can, knowing that we have limits, being realistic about it, right? There's a sense of realism when you're a Christian, knowing that we're never going to usher in the kingdom. We're waiting for Christ to come and renew all things. But there's a lot of good we can do. And this is a stewardship. God has placed us here at this time, in this place, in this country. And it's a stewardship.
So my podcast is generally listened to by pastors, local church ministers, seminary students, and deeply engaged lay folks. And all of them, and for that matter, beyond them, all of our society these days, it seems like, is pretty much immersed in political commentary, the news, cable news, social media, man, from the time we wake up in the morning to the time we go to bed at night. And perhaps that brings, if not now outright exhaustion, a certain level of low-grade fatigue that Christians carry day to day. Give us a sense as to like how, or let me say, where Christians should place political activity in their own life, their sense of political engagement, their sense of tracking the news. Yeah, give us a sense as to how you would encourage us to think about those categories.
That's a great question. I think it depends where somebody is. You know, there are some people that are so deeply obsessed with this that they actually need to reorder their priorities and really think about the diet of content that's coming into their brain and assess their spiritual disciplines, get their loves, their affections ordered rightly. There's others that maybe need to get more involved, that maybe are disengaged and have some measure of influence, or God's calling to step in and engage in some way. It really depends on calling. And one of the things I don't want people to take away from my book is that everyone now has to be angry on social media at the same time about the same things. That's not what I'm calling people to. I'm saying, what does it look like for you to steward your citizenship with the calling that you have? For some, it's as minimal as voting and researching that and leading their families well in the season of life. For others, God may be calling to say, you know, I need to run for school board, or I need to run for Congress, or others might be to say, I need to speak about a few of these issues in my church to help educate the people that I have. For others, it could be some local issue, right? Where you're working with a nonprofit, or you're starting a Christian school or something like that. I do want to emphasize too, that I think the locus of God's activity in the world is through the local church. And we should not underestimate what God is doing through local churches and communities around the country.
So give us a sense as to your own story in this, Dan. We'd love to hear you tease out for our listeners how you began to think these categories, what stage of life, and how you see your own ministry these days engaging these matters.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've always had really three loves in my life in terms of vocationally. One is I love the local church. I loved pastoring. I've always felt called to vocational ministry in the church since I was in high school. I've always loved politics and history. I mean, I was subscribing to things like the National Review and, you know, U.S. News and World Report and things like that when I was in high school. And I've always loved words and writing. And so the Lord sort of fused those together in different ways. And, you know, when I pastored, you know, my primary goal was to equip the people that I have. But I often found myself writing and speaking and thinking on some of these issues in a way that can help Christians think about them well and apply the scriptures. And then when I worked in public policy, you know, I was always thinking of ways that people in that space don't often understand Christians and the church and trying to interpret for them. So I've always kind of been in that space. I just feel like Lord's called me to speak, right, teach on these issues to help equip the church to think well and rightly about some of these things. You know, political, you know, the public square political ideas are an aspect of discipleship. A lot of Christians are asking, how should we think? People are shaping the minds of Christians, whether it's influencers or pundits, Monday through Friday. And so I think it's helpful for us to, as Christians, to apply the word and say, here's what scripture says about these things. Here's how to think well about this so that you can honor the Lord.
So our listeners, again, many of these have local church ministries, regular preaching, teaching responsibilities in the context of the local church. Again, you have different approaches to the pulpit, different philosophies of the preaching ministry itself. And some are arguing these days that, man, every Sunday ought to be directly engaged with what's going on in Washington. Yeah, you should say to your people what you would say, you know, on your back porch with friends, you know, that candid, that sense of just kind of personal assessment, personal reflection. Mm-hmm. You have others that still steer a million miles away from it, never want to touch on anything. Then you have kind of a lot of people somewhere in between. I guess give us a sense, or perhaps even a few suggested principles as to how pastors, and especially those with a preaching responsibility, should think about their ministry of the word and bring that to bear with cultural and even political issues.
Yeah, that's a great question. And a lot of pastors are asking that. There's pressure on pastors to be more, quote, political in the pulpit. I think there's a few things to think about. I think number one, you know, the gospel is always going to be political. You know, when the first century church confessed that Christ is Lord, what they were saying by inference is that Caesar is not Lord. When they were unable to participate in the ritual cult practices of the Greco-Roman world, they were being political in a way because they're following Christ. So the gospel is always going to be political. It's always going to cut against the false ideologies of the day. I think a pastor's primary task is to preach the word. And one of the things I want to say is that people come into church need to get something different than they get Monday through Friday. They need to hear a word from the Lord. I personally, and I know you do, favor expository preaching through books of the Bible. Not to say there isn't times to pull to do it like a topical sermon series that's targeted for a specific thing. But I think letting the text kind of set the tone is really important. That being said, I do think pastors do have an opportunity to equip people on moral and ethical issues and how to think about those well. Some of that can come through good application in your preaching. Some of that could be from intentional saying, here's what the Lord says about this important issue in our city, in our town. People are going into the marketplace and making decisions. You know, we want to equip the Christians in our church, whether they're public officials or business leaders, about how to think well about these things. Jonathan Lehman's framing, I think, in his book, How the Nations Rage, is really good, where he says that there are straight line issues and then there are, you know, sort of dotted line issues. And the straight line issues are issues we know the scripture is clear on, right? The sanctity of life, marriage, things like that. Then there are other issues where good Christians might disagree, right? So all Christians should care about the poor, right? We shouldn't forsake the poor. We should care about them. But believers are going to have different views on exactly how we care for the poor. What's the best delivery mechanism to alleviate their suffering? Where should the lines be for government? All those kinds of things. I don't think a pastor should be in the pulpit trying to be a pundit and trying to forecast things and be overly political. At the same time, I think we should equip people to live out their lives, to know what they believe. And I think a big thing for pastors can be not just talking about issues that are pretty explicitly biblical, but also giving our people a sense of how to conduct themselves in this world, how to conduct themselves in politics, to go into those places as a Christian that has deep convictions, but also treats people well, that treats people as image bearers of God, that has a consistent Christian testimony. How do I do this? Because people's way of being is being shaped whether we realize it or not, Monday through Friday, through the various voices in their ear. So I do think churches have an opportunity here. And thankfully, what I see in most churches around the country, and you probably see this too, is a commitment to the word. You know, there's a narrative, I think, in the media that conservative evangelical churches every Sunday is this sort of Republican Party rally, and we're handing out Ronald Reagan bobbleheads and RNC talking points and all this stuff. And the truth is, most of our churches aren't doing that. You know, you actually find more, you know, if you were stepping into a progressive church, you'd find much, much more chance of politics, right? We have some outliers, of course. And I think that's good. But I do think there are people in our congregations asking, okay, what does it look like for me to live as a Christian in this public space? And I think we have an opportunity to help equip folks that way.
Dan, thank you so much. I want to thank you for your book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism. Again, a great work, and I know you're seeking to speak to a contemporary cultural moment and need, and I appreciate you giving me your time today on the podcast to help our listeners think more intentionally in this area. And so to our listeners, again, I want to commend Dan Darling's book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism, out by Broadside Books. Dan, thank you so much, sir.
Well, thank you, sir, for having me, and appreciate the great work that you're doing there at Midwestern.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.